Today we're going to have a look at breathing as meditation object. Breathing is one of the most, if not the most, common meditation object that we are given in meditation techniques. For some people it can be quite problematic because they have problems with breathing. And for others, breathing can be problematic because they have difficulty finding it or maintaining awareness on it. And for others, it can be difficult because it can be easy to be very sloppy with the breathing as a meditation object. There's something that can be quite soporific about focusing on one's or being aware of one's breathing. It's easy to breathe oneself to sleep in a meditation practice, and it can be quite pleasant, and I think some people do a lot of that when they meditate. So what we'll do is do a few exercises in breathing as a meditation object, and then have a bit of discussion afterwards. So if you get into your meditation posture, and you might notice, by the way, that during these exercises, I will not mention the word breathing. And this is quite deliberate. So if you get into your meditation posture, constructing the posture from the ground up, experiencing the whole body, being aware of the whole posture in the sitting, from the pressure at the base of the body lifting up to the very top. And from there, start to tune into the experience of movement. Movement sensed within the body. So looking for any movement within the body which is associated with inhalation and exhalation. Just the movement. Where do you find that movement? Do you find it in the lower part of the body? In the center? Towards the top? And where is that movement clearest and most obvious to you? Is there one part of the body where these movements are clearest and most obvious? Or is there more than one part? Start to focus in on the location of these movements at the place where they are most clear and most obvious. We have two movements, one associated with the inhalation, one associated with the exhalation. And if there's movement, it must be from one place to another. In what direction do these movements travel? Do they move vertically, horizontally, in a curved shape? In what direction do they travel? Focus on direction. Where are they going? These two movements, one associated with exhalation, one associated with inhalation, they must have length. Is one of them longer or shorter than the other? Or are they of equal length? Which one is longest? Which one is shortest? Or are they the same length? Focus on length. How long are they? Which is longest? Which is shortest? These two movements, one associated with inhalation, one associated with exhalation, is one of them clearer than the other? is one more obscure, more difficult to get hold of than the other? Or are they equally clear or equally obscure? Focus on clarity. Which of these two movements is the most clear? Which of them is the least clear? There are two distinct movements, one associated with inhalation, one with exhalation. Each movement has a beginning, and it has a middle, and it has an end. And then the next movement has a beginning, and then a middle, and then an end. Can you see the beginning, the middle, and the end of the movement associated with inhalation? Can you see the beginning, the middle, and the end of the movement associated with exhalation? Or are you missing bits? And if you are missing bits, which bits are you missing? doing these exercises requires precision, accuracy with the awareness. As you do them, do you feel any sense of strain? Is there tension in the body as you try to focus in on the details of the movements? Do you find yourself interfering in any way with these movements? If any of this is happening, step back from the detail of the movements and relax. Just watch the movements. Don't do them. Watch. Don't do. Or if you realize you can't help but interfere with the movements, then make the interference the meditation object. Make your relationship to these movements the meditation object. Now step back with your awareness and return to your sense of the whole body as it sits there. Back off from the movements and just experience the whole body. Do you feel any sense of ease or any sense of pleasure within the body? If you do, take your awareness back to that sense of ease or the sense of pleasure. Rest there and allow the energies to flow unhindered through the body. So where did you find the movements? Where were they?
Several places, kept on changing.
Several places, simultaneously or different times?
Different times.
Mm. Mm. So this is the place where they're most clear, most obvious, and it moves around. Yeah. Anyone else?
The abdomen and the chest simultaneously.
Okay, abdomen, chest, and simultaneously. Pretty stable in those areas?
Yeah.
The standard Mahasi instruction is to follow the movements sensed in the lower abdomen. How many people found those movements there? So some, a lot of people. The reason why Mahasi recommended the lower abdomen is because for most people, he felt, for most people most of the time, that's where the movements are most clear, most obvious. For some people, they're not clear and obvious there. They're clear and obvious somewhere else. So follow where you find it, basically. You want to hook onto a meditation object which is clear. So go to where the movements are the most clear. And it won't necessarily be at the same place all the time. It can and does move around. What directions did he get?
Out.
Out. What about in?
In also.
Yeah. But mostly out?
No. Equally in and out.
In and out.
Yeah.
Which way is in and out?
Well, this is the thing. Mahasi was right. I argued this point. And if you're lying down, it's up and down.
Uh-huh.
But if you're sitting up, it's out and in.
Okay. So kind of horizontal.
Right.
So that's
my experience.
So you like rising? This is rising and falling.
Yeah, I just pretend I'm lying down, and then it's rising and falling.
Okay. It's amazing the number of people who argue with Mahasi over this point. It doesn't rise and fall. It goes in and out, or up and down, or around, or whatever. Anybody else?
In and out, but from here. So I was my definition of in and out.
So is that more horizontal?
In an arc.
In an arc. Yeah. An arc shape. And it was a consistent pattern? Or did it change over the period?
That changed.
Mm. But that was predominant? Is that why you said in that arc? Or that's
yeah, it became more subtle. Mm. That was mostly at different points it did then, depending on how it went. I think the breathing was, but
yep.
It certainly settled kind of through.
Mm. Yep.
There's inflation.
Sorry?
There's inflation.
Inflation. What about deflation?
Yeah, and deflation.
Inflation and deflation. Mm.
So, I don't know how you describe that as being up, down.
Mm. Yeah, well, inflation, deflation sounds pretty good.
Mm. Does it cover rocks?
Hmm?
It covers rocks.
Yeah. You find all sorts of different movements are possible. And again, they can change a lot. Just because it moves one way one day doesn't necessarily mean it's going to move that way the next day. Just because it's moving one way this second doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be moving that way the next second. So keeping track of it, this is one of the reasons why these movements are such an interesting meditation object, is because they are, by definition, so dynamic. Which one was longest?
Definitely the rising.
For me. Definitely the rising. Unambiguously.
Sorry?
Unambiguously. Quite clear.
Yeah, I find I can really stick to the rising much more than the...
So rising is also clearer?
I think so, yes. Mm.
So rising is both clearer and longer than the
clearer and longer.
Mm.
And I'm always amazed at the quality of how it changes over a period of time. It's just
increases over time. Anybody else? Yeah.
I find the inhalation is clearer and the exhalation is longer.
Mm. So inhalation is clearer and shorter.
Yeah.
Exhalation is longer and more subtle.
Yeah.
Mm. Anybody else? Any other patterns? Yeah.
One seems to be quite erratic.
Mm-hmm. So no particular pattern. Yeah. And that happens too. That doesn't have to be a specific pattern. These are exercises in seeing what is going on with it. And you can find that in one sitting there's no pattern, in the next sitting there is one. It's, again, there's no pattern in the absence of pattern. Which one was most subtle? Least clear?
Out-breath, particularly at the end.
Out-breath, exhalation.
Exhalation, and particularly at the end of it.
Mm.
I think the out-breath. I think the out-breath is where the mind is most likely to wander as well.
Mm. Anyway, anybody vote for movement associated with inhalation as being the most obscure? Sounds like general consensus. What about beginning, middles and ends? How did you go there?
Yeah.
All of them?
Yeah.
Good. Tick them off. Huh?
Sometimes.
When they're not there, which one do you tend to miss?
Which one you miss?
Yeah, if they're not there.
Only when I stop.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Only when the breath stops do I miss it.
Well, you're not missing anything there because there's nothing to miss. Anybody else? Beginnings, middles and ends?
The end of the exhalation.
That's what you miss.
Yeah.
I guess I was attempting some sort of control. It was
the
middle.
Middle.
Yeah.
So middles disappear.
Yeah. It was just going with the breath. The middle was that I more or less had to control the length of the breath to get a middle.
So beginning is clear, end is clear, but what's going on in between is a bit hazy. Yeah. Anyone else?
Yeah. It was
Yeah. Yeah. Some people find great difficulty with middles. I'm not sure. In certain cases, I think it's the concept of the middle. It's like when you're looking for it. It's, is this it? Is that it?
How do you know it's middle when you don't know how far you have to go?
Exactly. You only know the middle in terms of beginning and end. So you know.
You know
the middle comes after the beginning.
Yeah.
that's one vital clue.
Where does the beginning, end, and the middle start?
Ah, where's the border? Yeah.
Just before the end.
I guess that's the conceptual problem, is that there's no border between it, unless you take it a moment after the beginning, then you're in the middle.
Does that become really noticeable after a while, that you can really see the middle of the expansion?
What's really the purpose of the exercise is to focus on beginnings and ends. Middle is the default position. We often actually tune into the middle of things and miss the beginnings and the ends. So the interesting thing, I feel, it comes when you start to watch for beginnings and ends.
Isn't that almost the same point then, where when the out breath finishes, the in-breath almost instantaneously starts.
Does it?
That's a dilemma for me, because I find I do it out, you know, I'm aware of exhalation, and sometimes I'm sort of waiting for inhalation, and I force the issue and become conscious that, oh, I think I better breathe in. And I'm not quite sure why, because I'm worried I won't breathe again or something.
There's one retreat that I did, one of the meditators is very experienced practitioner, he said it came as a shock to him during these exercises that every inhalation that he has begins with a moment of panic, that oh my god, I'm going to die, and then he inhales, and it's very very subtle, but it was really shocked him that he panics at the beginning of every inhalation. But normally he doesn't notice it. It is quite interesting. Why do you begin to breathe? Why do you inhale? What stimulates that initial movement? Another interesting area is if you're following the exhalation, it gets more and more subtle. Do you see a clear end to that and therefore a gap and a beginning of the inhalation? Or is there thus just this kind of murkiness which is clarified by, oh, that's definitely inhalation. And if there is a gap between exhalation and inhalation, where does the awareness go during the gap?
That's the easiest place to lose it.
Okay. Hmm. Anybody have any experiences about it? Christine? It does, doesn't it?
Yeah. Not this time, but last retreat, I actually only discovered in the last couple of days that I found that fascinating, the gap.
Yep.
Have you found people that cannot meditate while watching the Raja pull their breath?
Now, for some people, breathing is a disaster as a meditation object.
Yeah, right. So what would you say would be the next area for them to bring their attention to?
Well, one of the things we've been doing in these morning exercises is look for what is clear. So basically, people have different sensitivities. So you find what is it that is most clear to me, and then that's your primary object. So for some people, breathing is hopeless. For some people, the body itself doesn't work. Mm. I've got not many, I have to say, but a few students who use as their primary object thinking. Because that's clearest to them.
A lady came to me with a problem that she watched her breath, she had panic.
Yeah.
And you contracting to the side of the neck.
That's
tightening the stomach.
That's one of the problems with breathing. It's so bound up with our psychological state that if there's a problem with our psychological state, like anxiety or whatever, that will come out in the breathing. Mm. But equally, the breathing will trigger the state. There's a very close relationship between the state of mind and the state of the breathing, which makes it unsuitable for some people. Body scan can trigger anxiety attacks in people prone to anxiety. Never tell someone who has anxiety to do body scan.
You mean sweeping?
Yeah, sweeping the body. Yeah. Right. That can trigger it.
When they have...
What's called generalized anxiety disorder, GAD, to the psychologists. That it will trigger an anxiety attack. So
right.
It is interesting. It's not all meditation objects are suitable for all people.
Right.
So you've got to adjust, make an individual adjustment.
Sometimes people with bipolar find it very difficult.
Oh yeah, bipolar is a whole different thing. Yeah, it's very difficult.
Is that right?
Yeah, very difficult.
And it's sometimes not good. through them.
Yeah. So back to breathing. Gaps. Yeah.
Yeah, I often when I've been meditating for quite a while, I'll actually move to focusing on the gap rather than the breathing itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll often sort of be focusing on my chest, which is where I focus on my breathing. And I guess what I find is just a feeling of spaciousness, and mm-hmm. that's what I'm focusing on.
Mm. Yeah, so you find the gap rather than the movements. But you said after a while, you can't do that at the beginning.
Well, I sit down and start focusing. I'll always start focusing on the breathing, and then after some time, to the gap.
Is that because the gap is more subtle, more refined?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yep. If you find that you are missing bits of the breathing process, it's good to know that you are missing bits. Another bizarre characteristic of breathing as a meditation object is, and this is why I didn't mention the word breathing when I was going through those exercises, breathing is a concept. And it's a peculiarly loaded concept. And if I follow my breathing, I'm bringing a whole lot of conceptual baggage to the enterprise. For example, my idea of where I breathe, of how I breathe, and so on. And that conceptual baggage gets in the way of the actual engagement with what's going on in the body. I like the word movement because it's neutral. And it also points out that what the object is what the Buddha calls air element, vayu dhatu. In the Mahasi method itself, Mahasi Sayadaw, of course, was Burmese, and Burmese Buddhism is very strong and very intellectual, and they're very orthodox. The orthodoxy is, in some way, it's the Burmese Buddhism in some ways is medieval. The orthodoxy is actually enforced by the state. You cannot give a Dharma talk in public in Burma unless you have a Dharmacharya degree. And the examinations are supervised by the state to make sure standards are kept up. And if you don't teach the orthodoxy, you can be jailed. There's a 5-year prison term for violating the orthodoxy. They take it very seriously. But in this atmosphere of ultra-orthodoxy, Mahasi got into trouble because he said, follow the breathing at the abdomen. And according to Theravada orthodoxy, if you go to an orthodox Theravada teacher and say, I want to do breathing meditation, what should I do? The instruction will be, follow the breath here at the point of entry and exit of the air. This is where you do it. This comes out of the medieval Theravada commentaries. It does not come from the Buddha. It comes from the commentaries. But it's a very strong belief. This is anapanasati equals follow the breath here. So when Mahasi Sayadaw said follow it here, there was outrage. And the way that he slid around it was to say, oh no, this isn't breathing, this is air element. So it's all right. Calm down. But even then, some people are outraged. I was in a meditation center in Sri Lanka where my instructor said, oh, you don't put your awareness here in the abdomen. Dirty, dirty. Up here. And I thought, but isn't this a bit dirty too? But I didn't say it. So it's the point is that breathing is just a concept, it's just an idea. Drop the idea. How do you know that you're breathing? Of course I know that I'm breathing because I'm alive, I've got to be breathing. But that's inference, that's concept. What's the actual experience that tells me that I'm breathing? That's what you go for. And don't take it for granted. Don't assume that you know. But have a look. Where do you find it? You don't necessarily find it where you expect it. how ridiculous to talk about breathing meditation down here. You don't breathe down here. You're breathing in your lungs. So how could it be here? But it is here, because there's movement. The concept is one thing. The actuality is another. Concept and breathing really get tangled. For example, if the exhalation becomes less and less clear, what you can very easily do, what I did for a long time, was I'd be following the breathing, following the exhalation, and it would, in fact, the actual experience would disappear, but I wouldn't notice because I was convinced it had to be there, so I just put a concept to fill the gap, and I followed the concept until the inhalation began, where I could drop the concept of the exhalation and follow the inhalation. And I was laying this concept. It was like there was the actual experience of the breathing, and then I would lay a concept on top of it and be following the concept, and then segueing back into the breathing and not even notice. And you can, you know, get a good concentration going, but the mind is actually dull because it's not discerning what is actually going on. And what we call insight meditation is all about discerning what is actually going on. Whether or not we are breathing is not the issue. The issue is that I know what's going on. If I'm breathing, I know that I'm breathing. If I'm not breathing, I know that I'm not breathing. That's the issue. That's the important thing. So, particularly with breathing as a meditation object, don't get tangled up in concept. There are other problems with breathing meditation. Some people are shallow breathers. And when they relax and start to do meditation, they find, and they follow the breathing, they find, poof, fall asleep again and again and again. Why? They're not getting enough oxygen. So you get a standard instruction, don't interfere with the breathing. Let the breathing be natural. For some people, that is a disaster. It will never work. They have to put a bit of oomph in it. You know, the simplest thing would be to emphasize the exhalation and then allow the inhalation to come. They have to breathe artificially if they're using breathing as a meditation object, because otherwise they'll fall asleep. So breathing is quite peculiar, and it's you need to really drop any concept you have of what it is or should be and just examine the experience itself. The result may be that you decide that breathing is not a suitable meditation object, at least not suitable as a primary object. It may be quite suitable as a secondary object. What else? Anybody find that they were interfering with the breathing? Yeah? How did you know you were interfering with it?
Straining.
There was the sense of strain. Mm. That was quite noticeable. Mm. That's another problem with breathing as a meditation object. It's very, very delicate, and it's easy to start pushing it and to create a strain. And again, if you're not sensitive to what's going on, then that can get worse and worse and worse and create real problems. So if you notice that there's strain, one possibility is, having noticed it, then you can step back from it and just allow the breathing to happen without doing it. What I do is, when that happens, is I have this little, I label the, or name the experience, watch, don't do. And I tell that to myself. And that usually disentangles me. Sometimes, if you find that you can't help but interfere, then the interference itself becomes a meditation object. So it's not so much the breathing which is the object, but your relationship to the breathing which is the meditation object, which is mind as well as body. And sometimes you just drop it altogether. Just don't go somewhere else. Send the awareness somewhere else. When you step back to the whole body, what happened then? anybody, did he get a sense of ease, or was that just propaganda? How come? What was the relief?
Focusing on the breathing as a primary object creates a lot of strain.
And this is normal? That you usually get that strain?
So that's why I think I spontaneously moved to the posture.
The opening wide, it lets things happen without any control. Sometimes that's what you need to do to abandon the control. Anyone else? Find anything interesting?
I see sometimes. Sometimes when I let go and watch, I'll see a ball expanding, contracting, a wave rather. I see things. In a visual.
Yeah. Is it pleasant?
It's pleasant. I can sort of get off on the beach. Especially the wave.
Yeah. Sometimes with breathing, and in fact with any meditation object, sometimes we'll go in and focus on detail. It can be very, very precise with breathing. This is one of the things we were playing around with today, the different possibilities that are there. Sometimes people get into the habit with breathing of being very dull about it. It's like in, out, in, out, in, out, ho, hum. In, out. What's the time? Yeah. I just get incredibly bored with it because there's no precision. So it's precision is important. One of the insight meditation is all about the perception of impermanence, what the Buddha calls anicca sanya. And impermanence is about change. In other words, differentiating this from that. So precision is important. And there's a lot to see in the breathing process. So sometimes, really going in and focusing in, sometimes it's a case of pulling back and looking at the broader picture and letting things move within that broad framework. So if I go in and watch with great precision, it takes a lot of energy to do that, and there can be strain. So back off. Open up and let things move. So sometimes it's appropriate to go in and be precise. Sometimes it's appropriate to move back and be wide. Different strategies at different times. It's not doing the same thing all the time, but making adjustments depending on circumstances, depending on how things are for you at this time. Yeah.
When you talk about precision, what do you think about that idea of seeing your breath like throwing a stone at a target? Have you heard of that?
No, haven't heard that one.
I think it was in an instruction book that Dilkananda gave me. I saw it there, but I also saw it by another fellow who said that imagine your breath being like throwing a ball at a wall and then seeing it return, like throwing your breath, throwing a ball at a wall is your in breath, and your out breath is when it's returning from the wall, and you catch it again. I just bring that in as far as looking at precision.
Yeah.
And I've always found that throwing the stone like the target really helps my precision. And staying with that thread. I just wondered if you had that experience.
Yeah, anything that works is good. So any of these images, if they're helpful, use them. But certainly Upandita would often use the language of hitting a target. Because he would be always encouraging precision and wanting it back in the reports. So Anything that encourages that is good, with, of course, the proviso that you don't tie yourself up in knots doing it. So you've got to have that balance. I think that's all, really. Any other questions or comments?